Carol Schrader, and I'm from a healthcare institution, kind of a health system in Illinois, and I'm also on faculty at the University of Illinois College of Nursing. What I'm talking about is a program, a Medicare Coordinated Care Demonstration, that is now going into its sixth year. It was authorized by Congress in 1997, and it's been enacted in originally 15 states in the country, 15 different healthcare locations, and now down in the last 2 years, there are only 11 remaining to look at various care management strategies to manage patients with chronic illnesses. And in this particular, and it's run out of the demonstration arm of CMS, and in this particular arm, we have the ability to design our own interventions, so the sites are different in the way they've tackled this issue. And at the end, I'll talk about what we're kind of up to next. To be eligible in our particular demonstration site, for everybody in the country, it's aimed at the Medicare fee-for-service population, not the Medicare managed care, but Medicare fee-for-service. So individuals wherever had to have Medicare Part A and B. In our particular project, they also had to have one of these, the five big chronic conditions: CAD, diabetes, congestive heart failure, atrial fib, have at least 3+ medical office visits or a hospitalization in the previous 12 months, and of course they couldn't be in a Medicare HMO, or have end-stage renal disease, because that's a different type of financing. And we're in the kind of center part of the state of Illinois and the county, so it's what I always call small urban, communities of about 100,000, Champaign, Bloomington, and then rural. We've enrolled over 3,200 patients since April of 2002, and at this point we have close to 1,100 in our intervention group that are active, and a little over 1,100 in the control group. Of course, since the beginning of 2002, we've had attrition mostly through death or enrollment in a Medicare HMO, and we got hit with that when Part D came into existence. We use the chronic care model, which I'll go through quickly, the components to kind of design our intervention. So we use those components, and I'll kind of give some examples of that, and that's Ed Wagner's model to design our intervention. So on the healthcare organization piece, we're an integrated delivery system. We have a hospital, a multi-specialty group practice of 300+ physicians. I have a medical director advisory board that takes in endocrinology, pulmonology, cardiology, and a medical director from every primary care clinic that I am enacting the intervention. And then we have the opportunity, because we get a subcapitation payment amount to deliver this particular project, this study. I made my own CPT-4s to fund team conferences and collaborative visits, because in these care management strategies, you never get to get the team together because nobody ever funds that, and so you're catching each other in the hallway. So I developed a code for that, and also to fund collaborative visits where the care manager and the physician and the patient and family could get together, and it was a funded endeavor outside of the normal traditional Medicare visits. We expanded our community health benefit and fee-for-service Medicare to offer respite care, homemaker services, transportation in our part of the world becomes an issue for some clients because of our ruralness, to help support them in the community. So those kind of services that are not traditionally covered by Medicare, we used a piece of our subcapitated dollar to pay for that, and then have contracts with area agencies. And so our delivery system intervention was focused on a collaborative team of a nurse, a physician, and a patient family. And we have case assistants in this model who kind of are the supporters. They do a lot of the monitoring on the team so that the professional staff are not engaged in that. And these teams are all located in the primary care practices. So, and in the those practices are all located within the rural counties. Long ago, our group practice decided that the specialist might be in Champaign-Urbana, but no patient should have to travel more than 20 miles to get to primary care, so we have primary care practices all over our region, so no patient would have to travel further than that for care. And then we implemented a combination of what I would call case management and disease management. Disease management tends to be focused more on single diseases, and we didn't want to do that because most of these patients are comorbid, but use some of those principles. And then the other thing is a risk stratification system, trying to decide, you know, who is of this chronically ill population, who is riskier, who might need more intense visits versus others. Then we've developed innumerable disease-specific and other kinds of tools for self-management that we've tried to, and have group classes, nutrition classes, exercise classes, other kinds of things for our patient population. Decision support. We spend a lot of time on our kind of what I would call nursing physician patient guidelines, and in particular, we had a planning year, and it took us an inordinate amount of time to duke it out between all the primary care docs and the specialists and the nurses on guidelines, and then also then trying to those of you that might be clinically oriented, trying to get the disease-specific guidelines so they matched comorbidities, so you weren't, which is something, and we go through this every year. We refine kind of the national guidelines and then go from there. We have a clinical information system, one of the for the care management piece that interfaces with our hospital and clinic information systems. And then we also have a clinical alert that says this is when the patient's in the hospital so that we can catch her in the ED or having a specialist visit. So it was, as you can see, a randomized intent to treat design. So we beginning, our thought was if we could get people, both providers and patients, behaving toward guidelines, we would eventually see a reduction in utilization of the big ticket items like ED and hospitalization rate. So we focused a lot on trying to get both providers, and we've had 92% of our primary care docs sign off on our guidelines since the beginning every year. You can see our characteristics of our population. We're average age 76, about split between males and females. Only about 30% are in poor to fair health. 60% have 5 or plus medications. So in essence, what we found, we thought more of this population is what we found in the duration of this, is that you get a lot of people with chronic conditions that indeed, just because they have one of the big five or two, manage them well. And so it's going to have some impact on the end of this story, or the beginning of the end of this story. Daily wailing, some of our, you know, we were looking at behavioral outcomes, patient behavioral outcomes. We were looking at lab tests, utilization, satisfaction, about everything you can think of, all those domains. So we got some improvement in some of the self-management behaviors. For congestive heart failure patients, daily weighing just to manage their disease is incredibly important. And it was abominably low. It's still not very high, but there's a significant difference. And then some of the other behaviors. We improved the testing rates across the entire population. And over all the years, we've improved blood pressure control, which was a very good clinical indicator, especially if you know, if you get that in control for some of these conditions, you're headed in the right direction. And everybody's been happy. Of course, most elders, I don't know if you do satisfaction surveys, tend to be pretty happy no matter who they see. When they see them, they're pretty satisfied with their health care, which is pretty amazing. But we did show some difference on a group that started out very satisfied with their health care. That shows a little bit of our contacts of our nurse partner in this equation. As I said, our model was nurse-physician. Each year, we still struggle because we're rural with the time it takes for documentation and meetings and travel, you know, trying to see see if there's ways to reduce that. We've, you know, done a lot of phone monitoring. So, here we go. At the end of 2005, because I still have, I'm waiting for my 2006 claims data from CMS to analyze, we didn't have any difference in hospitalization rates, nor were we budget neutral, and part of our neutrality issue, and when you're in a CMS demonstration, you need to be neutral, was that what we hadn't imagined is that, guess what happens when you get people in compliance with all the lab testing? Your Part B goes up. It goes way up. And so then not only do you have to accommodate the going up, but the addition of the capitated payment we were getting for care management. We did find, as we've looked in this 2005 data, that for subgroups we were getting closer to neutrality, and I think it drives some thinking about who you enroll in these kind of interventions. So for people who passed away during this study period and looking at kind of their end-of-life care, there was we were managing that population pretty successfully. Those that didn't have primary care visits at baseline is another population that seems to be on the budget side, on the utilization side, a good group to enroll that we were getting close to neutrality. And those with two chronic conditions plus a hospitalization. So I think where we are coming to in this one is that you need to refine. The chronic conditions aren't enough, and the kind of utilization we started with that you need to get the kind of economic outcomes, you need to focus on those kind of groups of patients. Physicians were incredibly impressed with this particular program, liked it, liked the way their patients' care was coordinated, thought the program improved the quality of life. So, since I have 2 minutes, in conclusion, we had very high enrollment in this demonstration for the entire term of it, and there were significant differences in some of the self-management behaviors, and we had higher rates of control across some of the clinical measures, and testing rates were considerably different in all the groups. So getting physicians and patients to comply with guidelines was very good on the recommendations of the guidelines. So we'll see in the last 2 years if what's happened with utilization once we have those claims. I mean, our hypothesis was if we could get them in control clinically, as I say, there would be some. But I think part of what's going to drive maybe not that difference when you add on the new capitation fee is that some of these patients didn't need to be enrolled. I mean, you don't have to be in because you just don't spend enough to get to neutrality, quite honestly. There were significant differences in satisfaction, and they were spending a lot of time on the subgroups. The last thing we're doing right now, and a second piece of why I'm in Washington, is we're working with CMS and Congress on some legislation to create a Medicare Chronic Care Practice Research Network. I've been doing these demonstrations a long time with CMS since the late 80s. It was the late 80s I started. And so we've designed a process where you could do these CMS demonstrations where you could take translational work from academic settings and translate it into these clinical environments where you still need to test whether it has positive outcomes in a much more difficult environment where you're trying to implement these in practice. And it would form a basis to do that. So we're really excited about the concept, and we're still making some positive movement in that direction. So we'll see if this finally gets legislated. So, that's who I am. There's handouts, and that's the end.
Can you take questions?
Sure.
Sure. I thought that I saw in your dependent or your outcome variables where the visit to ER, physicians visit, and all that. So you didn't show.
I didn't show those, all that data. What I said was that there was no significant differences. No. So I didn't put that data. I mean, if you want more of the data, I've got all the differences between treatment and control to date on lots of variables.
do patients have to meet the eligibility criteria every year, or just
no, just a time of enrollment?
And the 3+ medical.
Well, though they have to maintain Medicare Part A and B. So if they don't maintain that particular funding for Medicare, and in particular that might be the Part B where they're buying into it, then they have to be disenrolled, because we have to check that in the enrollment files, CMS enrollment files.
The 3+ medical office visits in the hospital or hospitalization within the previous 12 months, does that have to be related to the specific kind of patients?
No. It was just really any, like kind of like all-cause hospitalization, if you want to.
Did you look at the nursing home utilization at all? What would happen if they went into an
institution? If it's the short-term stay, non-permanent, we keep them in the program because we're seeing them, and probably some things that we've learned is that we need a lot more emphasis on the transitional care. We built it in, but we, as I looked at my time data, didn't implement what we said we were going to do. And one of the transitions is nursing home to home or hospital to nursing home. So we keep them in for the short stay. If they become permanent nursing home residents, we finally disenroll them. But we'll keep them in the program. I mean, some of our people have been in a nursing home 3-4 months and then gone back home again, you know. So we try to keep them during that transition because it's a significant transition and it's a significant management issue. We haven't looked. We've got some of that data, but we need to ratchet more down into it. We've got the data. It's just an inordinate data set to manage. We didn't see any effects we were hoping for because depression is such a major outcome on congestive heart failure, mortality, that kind of thing. Again, I think what you get to and why we're really looking at the time and kind of some of the behavior is the behavior of the practitioners when you're managing this very diverse population and what you can target into and make the most sense of. Thank you very much.